Ayan Hirsi Ali may be the world's most famous critic of Islam. She's also one of the most despised figures within the Muslim world. What especially enrages her critics is that she herself was once a devout Muslim. Born a Muslim in Somalia, Hirsi Ali fled to the Netherlands to escape an arranged marriage. There, she lost her Muslim faith, argued there was a direct connection between Islam and terrorism, and was even elected to the Dutch Parliament. Her outspoken criticism of Islam also sparked death threats from radical Muslims, which caused the Dutch government to place her under police protection. But her artistic collaborator, Dutch filmmaker Theo van Gogh, wasn't so lucky. In 2004, a Muslim fanatic killed van Gogh on a street in Amsterdam, and with a knife pinned a letter to van Gogh's chest, addressed to Hirsi Ali, calling for her death. Ayan Hirsi Ali recently moved to the United States. She's written a memoir called Infidel. Steve Paulson asked her about Submission, the film she made with Theo van Gogh, and why it offended so many Muslims.
In the Islamic world, there's only one creature that is more despised than women and women's bodies, and that's pigs. And a woman's body is contemptible. It is unclean. And putting the holy text on the skin of a female, a non-Muslim female, that was, for Mohamed Bouyeri, the murderer of Theo van Gogh, a reason to go out and kill.
So this was on your part and on the part of Theo van Gogh. This was an act of provocation. I mean, you were challenging some basic tenets of Muslim faith.
Yes. In Holland, we've been discussing the emancipation of Muslim women, but I've realized that you have to free yourself from the mindset that you have to submit your will to God. And so I have a woman in the film who is on a prayer mat talking to God, in which I try to have her shift her focus from total submission to God to one of dialogue with God. And so she uses Quranic verses, because when, you know, as Muslims, when we are praying, we read from the Quran. And she chooses to read the verses that say, when a wife is disobedient, the husband is supposed to warn her, leave her alone in bed, and then beat her. So we have that written on a woman's body who is made up to look like she's beaten. The woman who's praying and standing in front of God is saying, God, I've submitted my will to you, but look what's happening to me. I may no longer submit. So it was to provoke thought. It was to confront God.
Now, this was obviously a horrible, horrible murder. And yet I've heard that many Muslims in Holland actually reacted by saying you were the one to blame because you were so outspoken in your criticism of Islam. Did you hear that reaction?
Yes, that was the paramount reaction. And then Mohamed Bouyeri, the killer, was put on trial, and he said that he wasn't offended. He just followed a Quranic command that if you insult God, then you have to be killed. And he said he was following the instructions of Allah from the Quran. And so that kind of settled the debate.
Now, it's worth pointing out that these are Muslims in Holland. I mean, we're not talking about Saudi Arabia or Pakistan or Egypt. I mean, this suggests that many Muslims in Holland, perhaps in other European countries as well, have not accepted certain basic Western mainstream values of pluralism and free speech.
Yes, that is the shock that we all woke up to after the 11th of September 2001. Everyone in Holland thought there was peace and harmony between Muslims and non-Muslims. And then after, on the day of the 11th of September, a group of young Moroccan boys in Ede went out and celebrated the event. And more neighborhoods saw young Muslims as young as 4-year-olds and 5-year-olds carrying pictures of bin Laden and cheering the 11 September attacks on. And it's then that the authorities woke up to the reality of a gap in outlook and in values between the native Dutch and the Muslim minorities.
Let me ask you about one of the points that you've talked about, which has generated a lot of controversy, and that's your criticism of the veil, which you yourself wore as a teenager.
Yes.
There are many Muslim women who are strong advocates of wearing the veil. They say it prevents men from treating them as sexual objects. Why are you so critical?
The core of the matter is the sexual morality that holds that women and girls are responsible for the sexual self-restraint of the men. This is how it goes. The Prophet Muhammad said, to prevent chaos from happening, women from being fondled and raped on the streets, the best thing for them to do is to stay in the house. We are talking about the 7th century. Then that was being applied to the 21st century. So I said, if we now go to the core of the belief and say, why do you need to cover yourself? Then we can go all the way to how do we treat men? How do we socialize little boys to become responsible, sexually responsible men? That has made it very controversial because we are not allowed to change the Quran. We are not allowed to discuss the moral guidance of the Prophet.
But there are many Islamic thinkers who want to liberalize the reading of the Quran. I mean, who would say that you can't just take everything literally. You have to put things into context. I mean, especially Muslim leaders who live in Europe. I mean, there are some who say we have to adapt Islamic thinking to living in a secular society.
Yes, there are such thinkers. There are the Baha'is who live in Turkey, many of them also who live in Europe, the Ahmadiyyas, the Ismailis who follow Aga Khan. These are all Islamic leaders, theologians, who have tried to modernize Islam and make it reconcile with modernity.
And I'm also thinking of someone like Tariq Ramadan, the Swiss-born Muslim intellectual. His big campaign has been to try to integrate European Muslims into mainstream society. I mean, he opposes Islamic schools. He says if girls in France need to wear the headscarf to go to public schools, then okay, they should do that. Aren't there other people who are looking for compromises, ways to still be Muslim, but to be able to function within a mainstream secular society?
I'm not sure about Tariq Ramadan because he will not bring the violent act in relation to the belief system and the attitudes that Muslims borrow from the Quran. He just condemns the behavior that is unwelcome and unpleasant. But the Ahmadiyyas and the Ismailis that I'm talking about, these are people who have actually tried to reform the basic tenets of the belief system of Islam, and they have been labeled heretics. They are not welcome in Mecca. In the Muslim countries where they've started their movements, they are persecuted.
Well, one thing I find curious about the response to you is, and I've read a lot of articles about what people are saying about you, and of course there are many people, especially in the West, who admire your bluntness and your courage. There are also critics. For instance, the writer Ian Baruma has said that he has yet to meet a Muslim woman who feels allied with you, even though you are so outspoken against the oppression of women within Islam. But his point is that you are such an outspoken critic of Islam, you come across as being so zealous that alienates the very women you say you want to help.
I think that is because Ian assumes that if you discuss the faith, as I am doing, then you ought to have a following. It's never been my aim to have a following. This is what Muslim men and women believe. I had worked in shelters, and a Muslim woman who was beaten by her husband would be rescued, and she would go back to her husband and say, no, he beat me because I was disobedient. I don't want in the hereafter to go to hell, so I will go back to my husband and be a better wife. And so it's not my purpose to go and have these women following me and rallying behind me. It is to create awareness and then make that explicit. So it's to disturb, it's to provoke thought, it's to provoke change, but it's not to have large numbers of women cheering behind me. I mean, by the time that happens, it's probably going to be 100 years from now and I won't be around.
But I guess the question is to be most effective in bringing about change and changing the mindset of many Muslims, and we're probably particularly talking about in the West, Muslims in Europe and in the United States. Does that change need to come from within, from people who still profess their faith but say, okay, we need to reinterpret certain matters of Islamic law, or can it come from someone from the outside, as you have become? I mean, you who are, you know, who say you don't believe in God, who are a flat-out outspoken critic of Islam.
Those people who have an interest in the status quo, and that is not criticizing Islam, not making the incompatibility of Islam and liberalism explicit, those people will always say things like, but now she's an outsider. Once you go and criticize the Prophet and the Quran, you'll always be labeled an outsider. There is no one strategy towards change. There are many different strategies.
It sounds like you don't want to be considered an outsider. Do you still consider yourself a Muslim?
I no longer submit to the will of Allah, no. I don't believe in hell and heaven, so that definition of Islam is not one I follow. But I'm a product of that culture. I'm a product of that religion. And like all of us engaged in this debate, I feel I have an obligation to at least tell the truth and how I see things to the best of my knowledge. And such things as insider, outsider in a globalized world where insiders and outsiders live in close proximity with each other have become irrelevant. It's about humanity.
I have to ask you, what do your parents think about your criticism of Islam?
My parents think that my time in Holland have made me go insane. They think that the Dutch have influenced me in such a way that I've left God, and leaving God is equal to insanity. I am a disappointment to my father. I'm a disappointment to my mother. I regret that. But I think I belong to the generation that is going to pay the cost of not being able to have a relationship with my parents, and that it's the generation after me who is going to enjoy the fruits of what we are doing.
You are now living in the United States. Do you still travel with bodyguards?
Yes.
Are they with you and all the time, 24 hours a day?
They're looking at me now and indicating that I'm not supposed to talk about security.
Well, I won't ask you any particular details, but do you find yourself always looking over your shoulder?
When I look over my shoulder, I see one of these large men here. I'm not allowed to talk about security.
Okay. Thank you very much for coming in and talking about all of this.
That's Steve Paulson talking with Ayan Hirsi Ali, author of the memoir Infidel.